You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, a credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today's episode is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. That's RockAuto.com. Game 2 of the series versus the Indiana Pacers took place early Thursday afternoon. To help me break it all down is Rohan Nadkarni of Sports Illustrated. How are you doing, sir?
I'm great, David. How are you, man? I hope you're enjoying the marathon of basketball every single day for the foreseeable future.
Well, you know, it's hard when you have a 21-month-old child. He does not seem to care too much for playoff basketball, not surprisingly. So I've been trying to sequester a few minutes here and there where I can actually watch games. Although I did catch game one of the Utah Jazz series with him, and for some reason he really likes to name Joe Ingles, and he keeps saying Joe Ingles is his friend. So
how
that's
about
cool.
That? Good for the kid. Joe Ingles is a good name. I remember being in Georgia once on a family vacation when I was very young, and they had a grocery store. I believe it was Inglace. I don't think it was Ingles.
I know what you're talking about.
It might have been Ingles. I want to believe that it was Inglace, but I think it must have been Ingles, considering it was really rural Georgia.
Yeah, that's a little fancy for rural Georgia.
But, you know, I loved saying the name of that grocery store going up, so I understand where your 21-month-old is coming from.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, Jingling Joe, that's also part of it too. But now, yeah, Joe Ingles and my son Jake are both friends, which is ironic because Joe himself has a son named Jake. So that's all interesting there. But I'm sure that's not why everybody's tuned into the show. With Victor Oladipo back in the lineup, there were concerns that the Pacers might challenge the Heat. Miami got off to a quick start as Duncan Robinson caught fire early on. But Bam Adebayo also picked up two quick fouls in the first 4 minutes of play, and things predictably bogged down as Indiana was able to get back in the game to take the lead. Things were mostly back and forth in the first half, but in the third quarter, Bam re-energized, constantly making impact plays, finishing with a game-high plus 19 in his 32 minutes as the Heat tightened up their defense, limited their turnovers, and held on to a 109-100 lead that didn't feel that particularly close, at least to me. Ron, any general thoughts on the game?
You know, I thought the Heat really showed in game two the talent deficit that's there between these two teams right now, and I don't mean that as an insult to Indiana. I think the Pacers are dealing with two issues right now. Mm-hmm. Oladipo hasn't looked right all season long. He hasn't looked great during the restart. Just when it looked like he was maybe getting his rhythm back in March, the pandemic happened and play stopped, and they're also missing Domantas Sabonis, who's been their best player this season. And I just think those are two things that are very difficult for them to overcome right now, whereas you have a Miami team that's at full strength and a very cohesive unit. So that was kind of my takeaway, I think, from game two. I think one team is just proving they have a little bit more right now. I do think it was great the Heat were able to get Duncan Robinson going. That was clearly a point of focus for them early in the game. I would like to see Jimmy Butler maybe stop passing up so many layups. I'm sure we'll get to really granular stuff like that at some point. But yeah, I think my general takeaway is that the Heat are just a team that's operating at full capacity in many regards right now, and the Pacers don't have that luxury.
Yeah, Oladipo actually had a pretty solid game. Maybe not a great one. He finished 5-14 overall for 22 points, 4-11 from 3-point range, but was able to knock down all 8 free throw attempts. But I see what you're saying. There are clearly limitations there. He does not feel 100%. And while he was impactful, he was able to use a quick first step to get to the line or draw fouls. I think it was not his best showing. Probably his best showing in the bubble, but that's not saying much. But either way, though, not 100%. And it's pretty clear that Miami does have a greater talent over the Indiana Pacers, considering their injury status. But I think you're right, though, in mentioning Duncan Robinson, who is clearly the story of the game. He struggled in game one. It didn't look like they were giving him the kind of open looks. I saw some people kind of hinting at maybe it's the possibility of Goran Dragic that kind of threw Duncan off a little bit. But I kind of looked back at all of Duncan's shots after game one, and I didn't see anything that particularly stood out. I think there were a lot of open looks. He wasn't converting. I know that Indiana probably tightened their defense to try and limit the kind of easy looks that Duncan was getting. But there were some moments there in game one where he was wide open and he was just way off. Like, we haven't seen his shot looked so wonky at any point, I think, over this season. And then in game two, he was just absolutely unstoppable. I asked Goran after the game whether he had said anything in particular to get Duncan going. He just said, no, just shoot the ball. Like, we're you know, so frustrated with him whenever he passes up shots. So it was good to see him go out there, and go out there he did. He knocked down his first seven three-point attempts and then finished 7 of 8 overall, finished with 24 points. Just amazing display. He just seemed like he could not miss.
It's really hard to have a more efficient game than he had. I think at one point, like you mentioned, I think he was 6 for 6, and he had 21 points because he'd also gotten fouled on a three. He just – it's really important to get him going early too, because I think we've seen the Heat emerge with a closing lineup that does not include Duncan Robinson. So it's very interesting to me how they're trying to stack his explosions up as early in the game as possible. Like, really important to get him going in the first half. There are just stretches where he's carrying the offense. I mean, it was a close game for the first three quarters or so, and that was when Duncan was doing the most of his work. So I thought that was really interesting. I'm with you there. I think for him it just comes down to getting as many shots up as possible. You know, when I spoke to him earlier this season, he told me Spo has never once told him he's taking a bad shot. He has, I think, the ultimate green light. Yeah. I don't think anyone in the organization minds when he shoots. So I think for him, it's always just a matter of reps. You do have to wonder if there was some level of nerves in game one, just it being his first playoff game, even though it is in the bubble, you know, situation. He just looked a lot more comfortable on the court in game two.
Yeah, no doubt. I kind of, you know, tying back to that, I had actually managed to speak to him over the weekend for a full interview, which you should totally check out if you haven't. I keep plugging it, but it was a really good conversation, with Duncan. And one of the things he mentioned was that he was really looking forward to the opportunity to prove all the naysayers, because of course there's a big question about the Heat and their youth and whether or not he'd be able to step up to the challenge. And then he kind of lays an egg in game one. I think there was definite pressure that he was putting on himself. And then one of the things he also mentioned to me was that the veterans have all told him that, you know, things change from game to game. So you never kind of get too high or too low based on any one performance. A lot can change very quickly. And for him, he just seemed like he was much more focused and kind of relaxed. Like he didn't seem as keyed up as he was in game one. In game one, he had that shot, his second three-pointer. He finished 2 of 8, I want to say, from the field. And that second three-pointer where he got fouled again, where he was just kind of yelling to psych himself up. There weren't those moments in game two. It just seemed like he was much more even-keeled. He was just taking the shots that were, you know, available to him, and he capitalized completely. So it's good to see Duncan kind of get back into that rhythm. I'm not sure that we can kind of count on that performance regularly, although he's been so incredible over most of the season. I think it's pretty clear that he's still Miami's, if not third best player, at least third most impactful player, especially on offense, maybe even second most impactful player. But do you see any issues there with the Goran issue starting in the first half, and that maybe that he's a little bit too ball dominant as far as getting his shots and not necessarily looking to Duncan as much as other players are in that starting lineup?
Oh, that's very interesting. Is that it? Is that like a narrative that's starting to come out? Is that a thing people are saying on the internet now?
Yeah, I mean, there are concerns that Goran is starting, and that maybe that throws everything off as far as the way they run their sets, that he dominates again the ball so much. He's looking for his own shot and not necessarily the kind of typical point guard. Like, if it's different if you've got Kendrick Nunn on there, because he doesn't bring the ball up, he doesn't create it, he creates his own shot off the dribble for the most part, but it's not like he's holding on the ball too much. And with Goran, it's the exact opposite, where he's bringing the ball up, he initiates almost all of the offense, even with Bam or Jimmy in there, and so that kind of throws everything off. Have you noticed anything like that?
It is interesting. I will say that I've always been a big proponent of, in the playoffs, I just want teams to start their best five players. It really bothers me when they don't. I especially love when later in a series, like, pretense gets thrown out the window and teams say, okay, like, that's enough, we're just starting our best five players. Like, if you remember the Warriors-Rockets series of yesteryear, by the end of the series, the Warriors would just start the death lineup. The Rockets were just playing small, and that's the playoff basketball I want to watch, and I think that's what teams should be doing more often. So in that regard, I like the Heat starting Goran. I mean, he's been one of their better players this season. He's been great off the bench. I think it makes a lot of sense. I like the way the current rotation works a lot, because I think you have enough ball handling in the second unit between Hero and Iguodala. Iguodala, I think the most underrated aspect of his arrival to Miami, by the way, is all the ball handling he's doing on the second unit as kind of the facilitator. You see him bring the ball up sometimes. I don't think having Goron is going to take Duncan out of his offense. I mean, we saw it today how it could work exactly. Right? Are you maybe running as many BAM handoffs and things like that? And perhaps, but not as much. But I still think there's enough movement in the offense, enough guys cutting, guys flying around, Duncan coming off screens. Jimmy, I thought, had a great game as a screener. He's a very willing screen setter in a way that a lot of guys of his stature and at his position are not. And I think that helps the offense go a lot as well. So as long as things like that are happening, I think they're going to be in a good position. I wouldn't worry about having someone of Goran's talent level out on the floor.
See, I'm still concerned that maybe they're capitalizing on Indiana being somewhat weaker, but I still feel like they're kind of threading the needle a little bit as far as their success goes. Like they're playing it a little bit too close there, where there's this high variance, where the things could fall apart very quickly there. And so I have some concerns, but one of the concerns I mostly have is their sluggish first half performances. And I still think that maybe that might come back to haunt them. It's something we'll talk about in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Make sure to start off your morning with the news that matters in just 10 minutes. Axios Today host Nyla Boodoo and a team of award-winning journalists will bring you the latest analysis and insight into the trends shaping our world. Speaking of our world, one of the things that you can always count on is rockauto.com. I don't know about you, Ron, but do you even have a car in Los Angeles, or do you rely on transit?
Of course, gotta have a car in Los Angeles, man.
I wasn't sure, but I know South Florida, obviously you need a car. And whenever you want to update or maintain your car, the best places to get the parts that you might need is rockauto.com. They've been in business for 20 years. So easy to use. It's incredible to think of a website that's been available for 20 years and has functioned as well as rockauto.com has. You just look for the parts for your car. You find them. You have the right prices set aside for you. You pick the parts that you need, have them delivered to your house within a couple of days. And it just saves you so much money rather than having to go to an auto parts shop or anything like that where it's so confusing, or to go to a body shop where it could take so much more money. I'm not a handy person when it comes to fixing things like that, but my wife had a busted taillight. I went to rockauto.com, ordered the part. Again, saved myself hundreds of dollars. Felt so much better about that. And so I just recommend it as highly as I possibly can to all of our listeners. All the prices are set for you. It's reliably low again. So go to rockauto.com, see all the parts available for your car or truck, and you write Locked On. And how did they, on the section that says, how did you hear about us? So that they know we sent you amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. That's rockauto.com.
There are very few places where I feel more intimidated than an auto parts store or, you know, mechanic. I feel like as soon as I get there, they know I don't belong.
That's right. That's right. I mean, I think a lot of people feel that way. And you always go in there not knowing exactly what to ask for. You never have to worry about that with rockauto.com. So I'm glad you brought that point up, and it's a good one for our listeners. I've heard that before. Actually, from Wes, we were talking about that. I'm not sure if you're a Seinfeld fan, but we brought up that part of George Costanza, where he talks about, you know, needing a good mechanic, and you never know what's going on with a mechanic because they could say anything. And,
true.
It's a scary world out there. Hopefully they're not taking advantage of you, but you can always be sure that you're getting the right price for you at rockauto.com. Make sure to subscribe to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts and always get the latest episodes by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. As I was mentioning in the previous segment, I've got concerns about that first half sluggishness that we've seen. It's reared its head twice in games one and two. I asked Jimmy about it post game, and well, I didn't ask about that necessarily, but I asked him what his concerns were. Now that we have a two game sample size, that, you know, they've walked away with two wins, you know, what's his particular area that he thinks he needs to improve on the most, not just for himself, but as a team. And he said that it was that slow first start. You know, a part of that is Goron kind of struggling in the first half a little bit. He was particularly bad in game one. Didn't really pick it up until the second half. In game two, a little bit more of the same, where he just wasn't quite as engaged until, I want to say, early in the third quarter. There was one particular blow by from Malcolm Brogdon where he got just right past Goran Dragic, and I tweeted out like an idiot, take Goron worn out because I thought he was going to be a problem defensively.
Oh, no.
He hits like, he takes four shots out in a row. He was able to help Miami build that lead in the third quarter. So, not my best moment there, but either way, they are getting off to a really slow start in the first half. Have you seen anything that kind of keys into that? Is it the Goron factor? Is it just they're kind of pacing themselves a little bit? I'm not sure what that might be. Jimmy said that their energy level is a little down because of the lack of a home crowd and all this, but then I followed up and asked him, is it really getting to you? He's like, no, we don't really care. So that was kind of dichotomous as far as his responses are concerned. I haven't seen anything as to why he's so much more effective in the second half, why the team is more effective in the second half. Maybe they're just a little bit more engaged. They understand what's at stake here. I know Bam's early foul trouble might have been an issue, but I don't know if anything stood out to you.
Yeah, I guess I have a couple of thoughts there. I mean, I do think that there's something to be said about just the different energy in the bubble. I thought ESPN played a great pregame sound of Eric Spoelstra explaining to guys that if this was a normal game too, you would be walking into the arena right now and feeling it, feeling the sense of urgency. And I think it's just hard to maintain that same level of urgency. And also specific to this series, I mean, this is the fourth time they've played these guys in 10 days or something like that now.
Yeah.
It's just a strange situation that I think that you can see these lulls in energy. I think to a degree the Heat are also a team that They always seem to play to the level of their competition for a little bit before, you know, you kind of figure out what's really going on here. So to me, they're not typically the kind of team that's just going to blow the doors out off someone for 48 minutes. It can take them a little bit of time to get going. I understand what you're saying. You know, it is back-to-back games, so that's not nothing. But is it something that's been happening the whole bubble? Not necessarily. Is it something that might happen for the whole playoffs? I'm not sure. So I guess I'm not ready to call it a pattern or trend just yet. I think it's definitely something to look at, but I guess that's where I'm at, that there's just so many factors that could go into something like that. I'm not willing to write it down as, you know, a concern just yet.
So you do put a lot of stock in how weird this environment is, that maybe it's affecting their overall level of play to some degree, even if it's on a subconscious level. I mean, you could say that there's definitely some benefits to having this empty gym as far as from a shooter's perspective, but you can think that maybe it also impacts them negatively with the overall energy levels.
For sure. You know, this is a while ago now, but I was speaking to DeMarcus Cousins, who obviously didn't go to the bubble,
right,
and we were just talking about what it must be like to play basketball in this environment, what it must be like to step up to a free throw line in this situation. And he just kept mentioning the word focus to me and how much more difficult it becomes. It must be to focus in a situation like this. And it's just such a completely different environment. You can feel it when you're at a playoff game. And I remember being at Heat Sixers game one of the playoffs in 2018. And it was the first playoff game the Sixers were playing in, you know, kind of at the end of the process, with Embiid and Simmons. And as soon as I got to the arena that night, I knew there's no way the Miami Heat are winning this game. They just have no chance. You can feel it. It's palpable. And obviously I'm not in the bubble, but I just think it has to be such a completely different environment that whether people can be cognizant of it or not, or measured or not, there's just no way of knowing how this kind of environment is impacting your focus, in what's just completely unknown. So I personally believe there just has to be some kind of effect.
No, I'm glad you brought it up, because honestly, I was going to mention something about it, and I'm careful to never appear too negative about wins. Although I did say the game one win was a little sloppy. It was an ugly affair. And
I'm surprised you're still not slandering Josh Richardson.
For what?
You were very harsh on him for a long time, David.
No, I wasn't. You always get hung up on the fact that I said he wasn't living up to his potential, and I think Philadelphia fans would certainly agree. Either way, like, I was going to mention that again via Twitter during the game, because I just felt like as close as it was at some points, and then Miami would always have this nice long run where they would pull away from Indiana a little bit. it never felt like they had the term that you use, that sense of urgency. They never really seemed to like be threatened by Indiana.
Well, I was going to say, I think part of that was because I just got the sense the whole game where it never felt to me like Indiana had a chance to win. And again, I'm not trying to insult.
That's fair. No, you're right. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You don't ever want to slight the opponent here because Indiana, they put on a good effort, if nothing else. You know, they are missing a lot
of
talent.
But they're shorthanded. And I think Oladipo is obviously not himself right now, and they're missing their best player. And I think the Heat, it just felt to me like it. You know, it felt a little bit like a regular season game, but that was in part because I just don't think the Heat are in fear right now the way they would be if they were playing the Bucks or the Celtics, or even the Raptors. It just is, I think you get the sense that the Heat know they're playing a wounded team. It's not unlike what a first round series was, in the Heatles era. Just, they're a little bit of going through the motions, and I don't think that's a cockiness of the Heat board. I think that's just the reality of this particular matchup as it stands right now.
No, it's a good point. I never considered that, but you're absolutely right. Have you thought about the minutes without Bam and Jimmy in the lineup? Because it seems like it's a huge concern for all of Heat Twitter that where it's going to be this doom and gloom scenario where as soon as both of them are taken out of the game, Eric Spoelstra is making a huge mistake and he's costing us the win, et cetera. Do you sense any kind of that problems with the lineups where that Bam and Jimmy are not on the floor?
I do think in the past, Spo, while he often gets criticized for what he does in the regular season with his rotations and maybe his stubbornness to sticking with certain groups, I do think in the playoffs in the past he's proven he's going to ride the hot hand. He's going to be very quick to adapt to what's going on game to game, quarter to quarter, series to series. So I think if he's realizing in a later round where maybe it becomes more of an issue, he's going to keep one of them on the floor at all times. Having said that, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't the Goran, Tyler, Kelly trio like boat racing teams off the floor right now? Like, haven't they had a lot of success with that group? Or it might be Iguodala is one of the people in there. So I do think they've had success with that lineup. And if, as long as you can get away with it in the playoffs, you do it. And I just think that's what's happening right now. I don't really look at it as playing with fire in a first round matchup against a team that you feel comfortable with. You know, if he's trotting out those lineups in the second round or somehow the conference finals and it's still a huge issue, then yes, I think it becomes something to criticize. But it to me right now, it just doesn't seem like anything that's creating any kind of problems for them, especially when a couple of these bench groups have had success.
I think there are some concerns about Derrick Jones Jr. He was a minus 11 out on the floor today. He continues to struggle. And when he's part of those lineups, he kind of offsets all of the good that Kelly's able to do. Kelly had a bad game one, but in game two, he was a real solid performer. At least I saw in the minutes that he did play, he was a good rebounder, good defender, and he actually was able to get to the rim and take advantage of some of those mismatches in the low post where they were guarding him with smaller players. But we'll talk a little bit about that in the next segment when you help me answer some of listener questions about today's big game two win. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Ron, I know that you like supporting local restaurants, and one of the things that you're most concerned with is doing so safely in your community. I know you're a big supporter of DoorDash also. There are thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage now more than ever. Ron, what's your experience been like with DoorDash?
Oh, man. You know, I just feel like I deserve a Nobel Prize in economics for how much money I'm pumping into my local economy for what I've been doing with food delivery during this pandemic. DoorDash is certainly an app I'm using all the time. I'm probably going to use it right after we end this podcast, David, and order myself some dinner for the Lakers-Bucks game tonight. So, or Lakers-Blazers, rather. Sorry. So, yeah, my experience has been lovely. Shout out to all the Dashers. Just, they leave the food right at your door.
That's right.
You know, it's great. My dog doesn't have to run to the door and get angry and start barking at someone. I don't have to deal with the human interaction. I can stay in my underwear the whole time.
Wow.
Just discreetly open my door, bring my food in. Contactless delivery needs to be here to stay. And
yes.
I've had a lovely time getting food delivered to my apartment. Just the least possible effort on my part. If anything, DoorDash has too many options. Sometimes I'm on the app for 45 minutes because I can't decide what I want to eat for dinner. So I've just had a lovely time using it.
Yeah, you've hit on so many good points. The easy ordering, the contactless delivery drop-off setting. They do so to make sure that you stay safe and to get the food that you want whenever you want it. Right now, our listeners, including you, Ron, can get $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app. I'm not sure if it applies to you since you've been using it as heavily as you have, but maybe give it a shot. Try the promo code LOCKEDONNBA. It's the app that brings you your food when you're craving it right now, right to your door. Don't forget, that's code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. I feel like there's a couple of players that we haven't talked about sufficiently. Tyler Hero continues to impress. 15 points, struggled a little bit from the floor, 4 of 14 overall. But I kind of just like his attitude, his moxie, if you will. He just doesn't seem to shy away from the moment. In his first two playoff games, he's been as engaged as you possibly can. And I think, if anything, that lends some credence to the whole idea that maybe he should be starting over Goran Dragic. But a player who we know will probably not get a lot of minutes is Kendrick Nunn, who this question comes in from Kevin. He asks, do Nunn and Myers Leonard play in the playoffs at all? And then as a follow-up, Huddy22 uses the hashtag AskLOHeat to write, why can't Myers get some of Derrick Jones Jr.'s minutes? To me, it would mean more scoring for the Heat. So let's get to Kevin's question a little bit first. Do Nunn and Leonard play in the playoffs at all? And have you been surprised that Eric Spoelstra has gone to removing two key players who started so many games for the Heat this past season? Because I know it's been a hell of a shock for me.
You know, I'm not that surprised. I said, the playoffs are just such a different animal than the regular season. And I thought one of the issues the Heat had during the regular season, first of all, Bam should be their center. I think everyone recognizes that. The Bam-Leonard front court, I think, struggled at times. It just was a weird fit. Even though, again, you know, that starting lineup had a great net rating. It was one of the better five-man units in the league. I just think it makes a lot of sense. I thought Nunn was just unfortunately having a really rough time during the seeding games. And, I mean, we talk about Dragic. Does he pound the ball too much? Nunn is a shooter. The guy wants to score. I respect that. But I don't think that he's necessarily the most adept at playmaking. So, I mean, it's weirdly just not a shock to me. I never thought that those guys were going to be, you know, in their final five as their closers. So I understand why, again, put up with the pretense when you know these aren't the people you trust the most necessarily when the game is most important. Do I think they'll play at some point? Yeah, I think they're going to see the court. I don't think it's going to be significant time. I think that eventually Spo, especially, you know, random people are going to get spot minutes in the playoffs, and maybe there's a matchup that it makes sense for them. But to be honest, I'm not very surprised. I know that there's been a lot of I think our old buddy Wes said that the Heat were playing 4-on-5 whenever Derrick Jones Jr. was on the court.
Yeah.
I think that there is potential for Derrick Jones Jr. if he commits to being a role man. I think he works well in that role, no pun intended, as someone who's just trying to catch lobs and finish in the paint. I do think sometimes he floats out to the three-point line too often. His minutes can be a little boom or bust. So I'm kind of actually in favor of sticking with him. But, yeah, you know, the way Nunn looked during the seeding games and just kind of the matchup problems it can sometimes create having Myers out there, I'm not fully surprised that this is the direction the Heat have gone.
Yeah, no, I have to agree with all your points there. And so to Huddy's question, I don't think Myers being on the floor would help Miami's offense anything. If anything, I think scoring hasn't been as big a problem, especially when you rely as much as you do on Duncan and Tyler and Jimmy and everything else. They've been scoring the ball well enough, especially against a pretty good defense in Indiana. And I don't know. I mean, they shot 48% from the field today, 52% from 3-point range. So that wasn't the problem offensively. And I don't know that Myers, given that Indiana goes such small lineups where maybe Myers Turner is out there, maybe he's not, maybe they go with Jakar Sampson. I don't know that you'd want to bring in somebody who's a little slower in Leonard, and where can, you know, things can, he can really be taken advantage of. And if that's the case, then he'll give up more points than he actually can produce on any given moment. So I don't see that Meyer's going to play in this matchup against Indiana, maybe against Brook Lopez in the next round. If Milwaukee and Miami both advance, I could see that. But you know, that wasn't the case earlier in the bubble, when Bam started and he played against, Lopez. So I don't know. I don't see either of them getting significant playing time, like you said. So, this next question comes from Josh Van Meter, who asks, using the hashtag AskLOHeat, do you expect Spo to sit or rest anyone now that we're up 2-0? I gotta say no.
No chance. There's right. Not the time for that.
Right. It wouldn't matter even if they were up 3-0. He's not going to change anything. If anything, Spo will justify it and say, and reasonably so, he'll say, no, we want to continue to build on this. We want to keep building on this chemistry to see what works. He's not resting anybody. I mean, it would have to be a blowout in game 4 in the second half for him to even kind of tweak and go again to Myers or Kendrick and at that point in time. The reality is that he's not going to rest anybody. I know it makes a lot of sense. And I think people are already starting to look ahead and saying, well, when Milwaukee eventually does away with Orlando, that you want to be fully rested and be able to challenge them as much as you can. But I mean, you can't worry about that. I don't think Miami's worrying about that. Everybody's going through the same process of playing every other day. You just hope that you can knock off Indiana as quickly as possible. Do you see, I never really talked to you about this before. Do you see how long the series might go? Is there a guess from your point?
I'm kind of thinking it's going to be a sweep.
Really?
Especially just, I just don't think Indy has the horses right now with the way Oladipo has looked, yeah. And no Sabonis. Maybe that's a wild take, but the Heat just look like a slightly better team that's at full strength, and that I think that's really just going to be the difference. But especially after these two games, you know, it's not like Indy is going back home or anything like that. I just think it's going to be very difficult. I just don't see the Heat losing to this team. They seem to have their number all year long. I don't know what adjustments there are for Indy to make right now. Maybe there's something obvious I'm missing, but that's the way I'm looking at it right now.
I just can't see it. Look, I know Caitlin Cooper of Indy Cornrows. I'm not sure if you follow her or not, but she's been great.
I do. She's great. She's outstanding.
She was actually supposed to be on the show yesterday and unfortunately couldn't make it, but you know, one of the things that she's pointed out is that they haven't been able to capitalize on some key matchups there, that either TJ Warren is left out there without the ball in his hands, or he's been over dribbling and not making plays for others as much as possible. And so they haven't really, they've attacked Bam Adebayo too much, which made absolutely no sense in game 1. And I think they were held to 8 total points out of like 9 possessions. I want to say, maybe I'm botching those numbers there, but I know they had 9 possessions where they got Bam on a switch and attacked him directly, and then wound up getting a total of 8 points out of that. So not good, as you could imagine, going up against the team's best defender. And so there have been problems there from a schematic point. But there's also a lack of talent, something that you and I have talked about. And you look at their bench, a key strength for Miami. Indiana was able to get a total of 18 points. They went 6 deep in their rotation, as far as their bench unit is concerned, and they were able to get a total of 18 points, and that's with noted Heat killer TJ McConnell out on the floor for 10 minutes. So not a great showing for them. I'm not sure that there's anything they can do other than get a sudden infusion of talent. If Sabonis comes back, if he's healed sufficiently, which I think he's been ruled out for the series, I don't see anything that they can do to really change the course of it. I originally had said Heat in 6, because I was a little bit more concerned about the Warren situation and Brogdon being able to dominate the point of attack, especially on an offensive point of view. That hasn't been as much of a factor as I thought, and Miami's switchable defense has really done a great job of limiting the kind of open looks that he's getting, and they do such a good job of moving and rotating and picking up guys and closing out from beyond the three-point line. It's been phenomenal. This last question before I let you go, Ron. Can Duncan Robinson be the Heat's most important offensive player, even though he doesn't play the fourth quarter? This comes in from Quez. It's an interesting question.
That's a really good question.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it, because he's very clearly an important offensive player. It's hard to quantify his overall impact just because of his gravity and the way he changes how defenses scheme against Miami, because he does draw so much attention. Although I think Indiana has mostly been going one-on-one. They have not been doubling Duncan as much as a player of his skill level would normally command. So I'm not sure if you have any thoughts about that, but I don't think he's Miami's most important offensive player. He's probably Well, that's a tough one. With Goran scoring as much as he has, with Bam's passing ability and Jimmy's overall production, it's kind of hard to judge. If you had to rank 1, 2, 3, 4 of those four, who takes the top spot?
I think you still have to go Jimmy number one, right? Like, you can't build an offense, I think, around Duncan Robinson, but you can around Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
It's just like it's just a symbiosis thing. Like, you need guys like Jimmy and Bam on the floor, but to have someone like Duncan, they all unlock each other in a way that they wouldn't on their own. So I still think you go Jimmy, Bam, and then Duncan, even over Goran, just because of, you know, the shooting that he brings and the pressure he puts on the defense, but they're all making life easier for each other.
That's a good point. Yeah, they kind of feed off that, and I think,
you know, if you put Duncan on the team that went 31-11 or whatever it was now, in the second half of that season, I don't think he's doing what he's doing on this current team.
No, that's a great point. I mean, look, it is, as you said, symbiotic, and there's a lot of, you know, who he draws attention, but he gets a lot of those open looks because of Jimmy, because of Bam, because of Goran and everybody else on the floor that he shares with. And so it makes a lot of sense that he's not going to kind of command that attention individually. He needs everybody else to do it. So it works well for each other and it feeds into each other. And that's why they've been the most productive. As far as Duncan not being in that closing unit, he's important. Certainly, I don't think it matters so much as not being in that closing unit, because it hasn't really mattered. The closing unit has worked, but they've been basically just trying to build on whatever lead they've maintained up to that point, and then just make sure that they keep Indiana from kind of closing the gap a little bit, and that's something they've been very effective though. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting series, perhaps. I don't think it's as boring as Charles Barkley might say it is, but it's been fun for me. Be sure to subscribe and follow this podcast to get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. Thank you so much, Ron, for joining me. Why don't you tell my listeners where they can follow you and your great work?
Oh, thank you so much, David. I'm on Twitter at Rohan Nadkarni. That's RohanNadkarni. You could also just hit up SI.com, go to the NBA page. I'm sure you'll see one of my stories pop up there. This was a lot of fun right up until the end.
I'm sorry I've ruined everything for you.
It's all
as
good.
I always do. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support. Yeah!